Yeah, obviously phenomenal historic season. We tried everything we could. I don't know how many shots he had tonight, but he was giving it his all, and just getting a little short.
34 seconds left in the game, which was pretty fitting for the type of season that he's had. For it to regular season to come to an end like that, he's played so tremendously well. I know, obviously, there's been a lot of focus on the pursuit of 70 goals. But in that, you kind of lose sight of just how well he's played.
You know, I wanted it, for sure, but, you know, it just wasn't meant to be. And, you know, for myself, as, you know, we look forward, you know, you turn the page, and the most important thing is the team and the team's success and making sure that I'm pulling my weight and doing what I can as a leader on this team and, you know, individually to help the team win, and especially as we go into the postseason. So that's where my focus is at, and I think that's kind of where my mindset's been at all year, you know, as far as getting prepared for the spring here. So, you know, it would have been nice, but, you know, it wasn't meant to be, and you know, I'm looking forward to the, you know, getting started here on Saturday.
Morning, Fan. Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Sorry, I already said good morning, but good morning again.
Hey, you. Buddy, you should never enough good mornings in my world.
Good morning.
So, yeah, good morning. Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. Good morning.
Rough morning for the Matthews family. They were into it.
God.
They really wanted it. It's the first time we heard it explicitly said from Austin Matthews that he wanted it. I think that was pretty apparent, though.
It would have been weird if he's like, guys, I've been holding this in the whole time.
I didn't care.
I didn't care. I got to be honest. I didn't care. I didn't care one bit.
Roll back the tape. What was the quote? Sheldon Keefe said, well, we're not. It's not our focus.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Sure.
12 shots later, Austin Matthews stuck on 69 goals as the season comes to a close in 6-4 loss fashion in Tampa Bay. Smart by Matthews, though, with all those shots and no goals, to get the shooting percentage back under 20%.
So now can't just talk about the outlier season.
Yeah, no, it was like it's right there in line with his career averages and shooting percentage.
I'm so happy you brought that up, because much like most stats in the world, I think, that'd be interesting to know, and then don't bother to look it up. I did think, as he was just peppering shot after shot after shot last night, and he had the, what, 5 or 7? I don't know. We always seem to have a disagreement about shots at the end of a period.
I think it was 7 in the first period.
I think they landed on 7 attempts, 5 completions. I don't know. It doesn't matter. He was firing from everywhere, okay?
Yes,
he was a chucker.
That was
he was Davidson Steph Curry. And that's fine. But I did think to myself, I'm like, I wonder what him not scoring these last couple games does to the shooting percentage, and, like, that's actually better. Somehow?
Maybe. I mean, if you believe in such things that, like, now he's due to score, right? Sort of, kind of?
I also had that thought last night. It's not how it works, and, like, that's not true, but I did think to myself, I'm like, oh, he's going to be so due by the time Saturday rolls around.
I apply my own sensibilities to these things, and I can tell you that, like, when I hit the ball super well on the range, I don't think, oh, yeah, I'm going to kill it on the golf course. I'm like, oh, well, there goes all my good swings.
I've told you my thought on this. Like, I don't even like taking practice swings because, what if I waste the good one?
Yeah. So, yeah, I would very much be thinking that if I were Austin Matthews, that all the goals are going to come in the postseason, because, God forbid, you have 2 consecutive games where you don't score a goal for a guy that had an 8-game goal-scoring streak. Yeah, that is a drought in his world. Anyways, so it's all over. Meaningless games, all of them, right?
Yes.
But a 4-game losing streak, which matches the career-long for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Some ugly hockey, man. Like, it must be said. And I understand, again, nothing to play for. Mm-hmm. Same for the Lightning. Lightning playing, factually, a man short. It's not like they look great either, but I don't know. How do you feel about the last week of games for this Leafs team?
I think that you have to have proper perspective for it. I think you understand that they were playing with a goal in mind that, hey, guess what? Like, if the playoffs end up going poorly, we will sit back and look at why were you playing with that goal in mind. But it was pretty clear what the goal of this team was the last 3-4 games, and it wasn't pick up 2 points. It wasn't make sure the systems are really locked in. It was get 34 above 69. That was all you needed to do in these 3-4 games. And you didn't do it. That was the focus of it.
Yeah,
and
you failed.
You failed. That was the thing you wanted to do. Well, okay.
The last week of the season was a spectacular... No, it wasn't a spectacular failure.
Now, the thing I loved about this is our boy, who, again, like, just, I hope he's able to find some pants in Boston, Luke Fox, doing journalism last night, asking Sheldon Keefe exactly that about the 4 games, and he says... I couldn't even tell you what any of the score was in those four games.
Yeah, and he's like, he was in the intermission of the Panthers game, he was looking at Bruins tape?
Yeah. Great. Like, I understand where we're at here, and I understand what Keefe is doing, because you don't want to be ringing panic. Like, we can do that, and mm-hmm. we can have these conversations, and man, if you're Brad Marchand, you're probably sitting there going, oh, geez, these Leafs struggling. Like, they'll be playing these games in the media the next couple days. But if you're Keefe, I understand why he's going to say that. But yeah, this is not good. I don't know that the momentum carries over or anything along those lines. Like, if the Leafs have the exact opposite game last night, let's remove Austin Matthews from it for a second. Let's say he doesn't score. But they have the game the Lightning have last night, and the score line is the exact same, but Matthews doesn't get one of those. I don't know that we're sitting here saying,
no.
Oh, the Leafs are really rolling. So I don't know that you can do the other side of it as well.
I suppose. And maybe when Sheldon Keefe said we're thinking about the postseason, not individual statistics, he was talking about making sure everybody's healthy.
Mm-hmm.
But if he was at all talking about, hey, making sure our game is in order, like that didn't happen at all. And nope. I understand, like, part of that is just personnel. Like, they don't have their playoff personnel. Nope,
they don't.
In the lineup. But, I mean, you said it in the outset. Things go poorly in the first round. I mean, he's fired anyways. But if Leafs bow out in whatever fashion against the Boston Bruins, Sheldon Keefe is out. But one of the... Like, after we get through the minutiae of what happened in this first round, we will absolutely be talking about what happened here the final week of the season and wondering whether that had some carryover effect. And wondering if Sheldon Keefe, you know, either was pressured into it or however it came to be, that he had his team looking as sloppy and disorganized and as, like, honestly, kind of a joke in these last hockey games. Meaningless. Got it. But, like, that hockey team played... I don't know, not like an NHL franchise the last 4 games of the season.
Yeah, and I'm not going to pretend I've been watching Boston with the finest of eyes, but it's like they've lost 3 of their last 4 heading into this.
Absolutely.
They lost to the Sens
100%.
On their last game of the season. So I think that this is the beauty of what we do, is that in both markets, we'll be sitting here having the exact same conversation about this is the reason why. And it's like, both of you did that thing heading into it. So something's got to give
you. They've had a modicum of postseason success, though, right?
They
have. It's a little different. And I guess, you can make the thing.
You go back to last year, though. You go back to last year. It's like, who had more playoff success? And, you know, Boston's, which is a crazy thing to say, it's true. And Boston, like, we think of them as this unchanged core, but the team from 2-3 years ago even is night and day versus the team that you see there now. So, yeah, I think that it's just as fair to... I'm not saying these aren't fair questions to have about the Leafs. It's just both teams are heading into this series with the exact same questions.
Yeah, I think it's one thing to have a team that's uninterested in the results, like maybe the Bruins were, although apparently in the third period, like, they really came on
strong
against the Senators, whatever. They'd scored one goal over the final two games.
Again, just like, let's live in a world where that was the Leafs. It's like, oh, great, you sat around for two periods, then you turned it on. We would not be sitting here singing their praises.
Yeah.
Unless it's Ilya Samsonov, and then we do. I don't know. It's weird how things work.
It's just... And I get it. Like, hey, they Kucherov wanted the 100th assist, and he eventually gets it. Although, like, he scores the goal first, and it's like, no, stupid! You have to assist!
When I saw Kucherov get his 100, I was just, like, irrationally mad. I'm like, oh, so he gets his thing. The guy who doesn't care about anything and is the LTIR merchant from many moons ago. But, so he gets his cookie.
But to the thing, it's like, yeah, the thing was, I mean, it's also the Hart Trophy, so any point helps, right?
That's
in the
true.
Goal, but yeah, it just...
She needs the goal. That's 5-on-5 goal. Now I think he has now surpassed Cody Ceci now, I think.
So you can't... It's hard to, like, force an assist, right? Like, that's a tougher one, and it looks more blatant when
ask the Leafs. They've been trying.
Well, yeah, but they're forcing a goal, right? Yeah. Everybody's trying to pick up the assist, but we know who's taking the shot.
Yeah.
It's different when you're looking for your 100th assist, and you're like, hey, somebody else score, right?
Please.
And you're trying to set up somebody for a tap-in.
Yeah.
It's, again, I said it was untoward against the Panthers, and again, it felt untoward. It's, like, weird when... TJ Brody scores his first goal in 100 years like over 100 games.
Yeah.
On a delayed penalty, and he's like sort of sheep. And Matthews was on the ice at least for the 6-on-5.
I know. Tavares gets the late one, and he's like, I don't know. I guess. I'm sorry. I don't know.
This is very strange. And again, it's probably all going to be meaningless, but it's to be doing it this way for not just one game. Like, there's multiple games where it finished this way during the regular season.
Yep.
It should be, and we will talk about the season as a whole and whether it was a success or not. It should be the number one discussion we're having. Instead, it's like, well, here was the stated goal. And it was stated after the fact, but implicit with the actions that were taken on the ice. And all we were doing in meaningless games was trying to have that happen, and we couldn't pull that off. And it's going to be, man, you want to talk about the punchline that this team might be if they bow out in the first round of the season? It's like, well, these guys obviously didn't care about the playoffs. All they cared about was getting Auston Matthews his 70 goals.
Yeah, that's just a different flavor of the punchline they'd become. Like, let's say Auston Matthews hits the 70 goals. Then the punchline is like, even with a 70-goal center, they cannot escape from the first round. There's no version of the Leafs losing in anything. Like, I mean, honestly, in the second round, there's, as we discovered last year, there is a path to ridicule in a second round loss as well. But the Leafs lose in the first round. There's no path to it. Like, let's just say, again, they were rolling and they didn't care. And Keefe was a bad guy, and he sat Matthews down and said, the only thing that matters, we're saving your goals. That stick is too hot. 100%. And guess what? Still ridicule endlessly if they lose
in
the first
round. And we would have done, listen. Hand up.
Yeah, I would have said,
well, he just killed their spirit.
Yep.
He wouldn't let them have their cookies.
Yep.
And so they were mad.
Yep. It's the Leafs. They have reached full-blown, like, Cowboys status of there's no way that this thing ends where you go, well, that was a good, respectful season. See you next year. It's just outside of that happening in, like, a conference final or something. I don't think we're there. So, I saw the same thing as everyone else the last couple games. If he gets 70, I think we're all having feels like this goes without saying, but if he has 70, does it not feel like the tenor takes a completely different conversation of, okay, they did prioritize something, but they got it done, and now they feel like they accomplished their goal, yada, yada, yada. Didn't happen.
It did not happen, and I could play the flip side of it. Hey, how about this? Look, try this on for size.
Yeah, sure.
Auston Matthews now motivated by this.
Mm.
Like, yeah, he's like, that was frustrating. So, I think... I mean, when do we find out the finalists for the Hart Trophy? Is it after the postseason? Is it the middle of the postseason?
I don't know how this works.
The NBA does it, of course, notably in the middle of the postseason, where Dirk Nowitzki bows out in the first round and he's got to hoist his NBA MVP trophy.
They used to do it so well, though, when it's like LeBron's getting it at home before a playoff game. Like, oh my God, could you imagine that they gave Matthews the Rocket at home ice, like, before puck drop, a game three?
Yeah, we have to wait.
Heaven forbid.
We have to wait for some celebrity who has, like, a passing knowledge of hockey.
How dare you? Will Arnett loves hockey.
That's true.
He's
Will
be there.
Okay. Is he hosting?
I don't know. I feel like he's poking around. He's like, if you need me, I'm here.
Oh, he is very there.
Yeah.
So you could see a world where Auston Matthews is like, okay, I didn't get my thing. I'm going to win the Rocket, obviously. Mm-hmm. And that was pretty apparent all season long, but I didn't get to my 70 goals. I'm not going to win the Hart despite my continued pleading. He might not even be a finalist. Is it possible that this is motivating for him?
I want to answer that question, but you did say something on the finalist thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that
narrative's
was enough.
Changing.
I do. I think that was enough that he is now
dropped
off a lot of ballots.
Oh, dropped off?
Yeah, I do think there are
people... Oh, not getting to 70.
I think there are people that have had it as a nice round. Man, we've done...
The Kucherov thing is the thing that, like, I think people are coming around to the idea, despite the gap in point between him and the second place finisher on the Lightning, that people are like, okay, but the power play merchant stuff, like the, like being, he's barely a plus player on that team. I think Kucherov is the guy that has had a narrative shift over the last couple of weeks.
I just look at the history of, I can't think of an NFL example of this, but I think of the history of the other three major sports. Auston Matthews reached 60. He got it.
Yeah.
Triple crown season in baseball. I'm totally blanking on
Miguel
who had
Cabrera.
It. Got it.
Mm-hmm.
And then Russell Westbrook. the triple-double season.
Yeah.
Got it. So generally speaking, just like when you reach that threshold that becomes so undeniable, I don't think one goal that we all would have immediately discounted because they were just force-feeding it to him should be enough to change people's minds one way or another. But I think that if you were somebody that was going, oh, man, I got to put him on. He's got 70 goals. Look at the lead. That gives you – if you were somebody that was wavering and you wanted – if you're Frank Seravelli and you want to get your Artemi Panarin in there on your ballot so bad, okay – then that gives you all, it's wrong, but that gives you all the permission you need to do that, to take him off or to leave him or bump him down or however you want to phrase it.
Yeah, I mean, this is the center of the hockey universe. But yeah, I mean, there's at least 50% of the voters who are not going over these Leaf games, the final ones with a fine-tooth comb, and at the end of the season are just going to be looking at the final counting statistics. Mm-hmm. And I guess for them, 69, 870.
Yeah, I don't think it's right, and I don't think it's everybody. But you can't tell me there, I don't know, it's a club of what, 200, 250 people that, I don't know, 10, 15 of them are thinking about that round number in there. Mm-hmm. It's just like human nature. How many conversations have we had about this where the round number of it all keeps coming up? I really do think that it's going to be, that could be enough to kind of tilt him off of being a finalist. Which, what? Like, if that's the case, can you tell him tomorrow? Like, do we have to wait until the season's over?
Well, that's it.
To then find out that he's not a Hart finalist or whatever.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, finishing the season on a 2-game goalless drought is a concern for a guy with 69
Hardly.
Goals and a million opportunities to score those goals in meaningless games. William Nylander, I'm like, maybe of a different opinion. He finishes with 98 points and stuck on 40 goals for forever, which is very good, and it's tied his career high, but had a chance to set new career highs. Seemed like 100 points was a given.
Lock.
We guaranteed.
What were you putting him on pace for? Like 130 different points in the time?
Yeah, and he's looked frustrated at times. He hasn't looked like the same player. I mean, he has been a guy historically has played some of his best hockey in the postseason. But if I was going to look at a final couple of games of the season concern, it wouldn't be the guy that finished with 69 goals. It would be the guy who's stuck on 98 points.
Yeah, Nylander is the guy who has cooled off the most. You mentioned it, though. He's also the guy who, trying to think, with the exception of maybe Morgan Rielly, he is the guy who has the longest leash because of playoff performance.
Yeah.
And
but it's not like he's a 3-point-a-game player in the postseason either.
No, but he has been the guy that has had and part of this is what he's been up until this season, is he's been the guy who has had the least drop-off of those guys.
The expectations
playoffs
are higher
but
for him.
Yeah, he's not 65-point, 75-point William Nylander.
Pontus Holmberg's going to be the center to set the postseason.
Does change the expectations of that a bit. Nylander's cooled off in a big way, but I think that because of what he has done in the postseason in the past, I think he's the guy who has the longest leash there. But yeah, like you cannot sit here and say it's not concerning that a guy who, when they were giving him the big contract that he got, was on pace for 130 some odd points, he didn't manage to eclipse 100. That is a massive sea change. Now, there's a million things that go into it. Part of it is the lineup machinations, and to your point, he's basically playing on a third line that he has to drive by himself, but that's okay. Like, you're making over $11 million next year. You're allowed to drive it by yourself. Maybe even you should be encouraged to. Mm-hmm. So I look at it, and you have to be discouraged by what you've seen, but I'd be hard-pressed outside of Morgan Rielly to find somebody that has a longer leash in terms of what is expected of them in the playoffs.
Yeah, and all of it is irrelevant starting Saturday, which is a late start, too, after 8 o'clock.
I saw that.
You didn't like that?
Mm-mm.
I thought that works better for you in your child care situation.
Well, see, but I get to be mad about everything.
Oh,
so,
okay,
like, yeah, in theory, it's better for me.
And we don't have to wake up on Sunday.
No. But that's not.
I mean, you do because you have a young child that wakes up at like 4 in the morning.
Yeah, I gotta get him.
My kids sleep in.
I gotta get him
like
doing
8
push-ups, getting ready for ball hockey to dominate. But I just it's the Leafs. It's Hockey Night in Canada. It's the first game of the playoffs. Mm-hmm. How dare you make me wait that extra half hour or hour?
I'm fine with it.
I know. But I wasn't even going to mention it. I've been seeing it. I've been looking at it.
You didn't have to comment on it.
You said a thing. And what I learned about myself this morning is that when someone says something around me, that is obviously, there's no other way to take it than them asking me for my opinion on the matter to be swayed.
Not correct.
Okay. You know what I think about that? Let me tell you.
Yeah. Anyways, game 1 on Saturday at 8 o'clock. So that's it for the regular season. Was it a successful one? All things considered, Toronto Maple Leafs finishing third in the Atlantic Division with a record of 46-26-10, 102 points, 7 points back of the Bruins, who had 109, 8 points back of the Panthers, but 4 points up on the Lightning. They finished with a goal differential of plus 40. I know the regulation wins thing was a real bugaboo. They finished with 33, just the same number as the Buffalo Sabres. But regulation and overtime wins, 41, just 2 back of the Bruins and 1 back of the Tampa Bay Lightning. Finished the season, of course, on a 4-game losing streak. Third time they've done that this season, and that was tied for the longest of the season. Brent Gunning, was this regular season a success? Understanding that it's all irrelevant.
Yes.
But like just in regular season terms, was it a successful regular season?
Thank you for throwing in that caveat, because that is like the only thing that matters, and you're right to point that out.
Yeah, I think it was. This is not some slam dunk start, you know, treating yourself like a baseball team, popping champagne bottles because you survived it. But I think given the expectations that this team had for itself, given the fact that they had no NHL goaltender for a month and a half, I think that, and given the fact that this was supposed to be a little bit of a reset season with the new GM, that I think finishing, and I'm just looking at it by points percentage, 10th in the league, that's exactly where they were supposed to finish. I don't look at it as some rousing success, but it is a, it's like a B minus B to me in terms of a regular season success. Where are you at?
Yeah, I think it's a little higher than that, honestly, because you can't just gloss over the fact that their number one goalie was not just like demoted. Like, he's obviously not waivers exempt. He was put on waivers. Yeah. Like, he was available for all takers. Like, you wanted an Ilya Samsonov, could have had him.
Anybody could have.
And then when he returned to form, I'm sure there were some teams that were maybe kicking themselves that they didn't do that. He is gone.
Yeah. Hello, Devils.
Their big free agent defenseman played 14 games poorly.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
boy,
it's just,
boy, do I remember.
Non-factor. You had two other forward offseason acquisitions that were uneven, if not looking like disastrous fits to start the season. You did galvanize, like, this team became, I mean, it must be said, this near decade-long generation of Leafs teams, not a lot of, like, likable teams. Like, I know the individual players, and, like, if you're into skill, that's...
It's basically, let's just put a really fine point on it. Basically, since the Nazem Kadri trade, that was the point of inflection for likable Leaf teams.
Yes, and there was a coalescing of what seems like chemistry.
Yep.
This team... You know, at the beginning of the season, watch Timothy Liljegren's ankles get caved in by Brad Marchand.
Accidentally, of course.
Obviously. Yeah, the GM had to step into the locker room. Mm. They also had a hinge point where their number one defenseman was lost for five games. I mean, the initial suspension was six, was it not? I don't know. It seems like 100 years ago. But it was the hinge point of the entire season.
Yeah. Thank you, Ridley Gregg, for sacrificing your head.
And then you had the 7-game winning streak where everything seemed to come together. And now it wasn't perfect. But I will say, considering all the things, considering the spotlight that's always on this team, considering the narrative that surrounded this team, considering the pressure on the head coach, understanding that, the stakes for him come the postseason are very high, but the stakes during the course of this regular season were super high as well. They go out on the Western Canadian road trip where things are very uneven.
Yeah.
And there's a very real possibility that he does not return as head coach of this team. He survived all of that. I think it was a very successful regular season. Now, when you have a near 70 goal scorer and you have all the talent you have half of your salary cap tied up into four forwards, the expectations are always going to be high. But yeah, going into this season, considering the roster they had, considering where they started, I thought it was a very good season.
Yeah, I'd agree. I mean, I don't blame you for this because you ripped off so many kind of checkpoints there. Can I add just one more little log of kindling to the fact? I don't think this is kindling. I think this is a big old log. Mitch Marner. Everyone's favorite number this year. He played just 69 games this year.
Of course, yep.
It's like that guy has been...
How many, and this is the beauty of having, you know, we can talk about what Tavares is now, but let's throw Morgan Riley in there. This is the beauty of having, let's not throw Morgan Riley in there. This is the beauty of having three superstar forwards, is that they're supposed to buoy you for any given period of time. William Nylander, we can't give him credit for the beginning of the season because Austin Matthews did have back-to-back hat tricks to save them in the first two games of the season, but right. Nylander carried them for long stretches. Matthews carried him for long stretches, and, you know, I don't completely absolve him of this, but also just weird year for him. They never really had the Marner month where everything's just clicking and everything's going. There were little fleeting moments, and I think he had a hat trick this year, so I don't want to say there were never games like that, but normally each one of these guys has a month where they're basically the NHL player of the month and they're just unstoppable. You saw it from Nylander, you saw it from Matthews. It never really clicked that way for Marner, and as you said, you know, that this is a fault of the way the team is built, but not having a guy who takes up, you know, 10% of your cap or whatever it works out to for Marner and missing him for that amount of time. And then even when he was there, he just wasn't quite Mitch. He wasn't. And 85 points in 69 games, another great season for him. But I think even he would agree he never kind of had that transcendent stretch that we usually see from him.
Plus, you did, you know, you found some things out. You found out that Bobby McMahon's an NHL player.
Yeah, and you paid him, so you don't have to worry about it anymore.
And you found out Simon Benoit's an NHL player.
And you paid him.
And I think you found out that Nick Robertson's an NHL player, whether that's for this team or not. Mm-hmm. Like, I think you found out that Nick Robertson, if the job is to shoot it in the net for him, it seems like that's going to be...
Should have given Matthew some pointers last night.
Yeah, the niche that he's going to carve out. 14 goals in 56 games playing like a minute and a half a game. I think you found some things out. Like, yeah. I think you established, what some of these depth players are. And I think the biggest development was Bobby McMahon.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be a shame if, you know, Cali Yarncroke gets into game one and Bobby McMahon doesn't. Yeah, and then, like, it's we're in a tough spot where it's like a Michael Bunting situation. It's like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah.
And maybe Bobby McMahon doesn't get into a postseason game.
I wouldn't worry too much about that.
Yeah, because, like, if they lose, then they can just mess it up.
You're going to lose a game.
And that might have been dumb in retrospect also, to, like, not put the good player in because, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Don't want to mess with the vibes. But,
it's like, he broke it.
Yeah.
Like, put him back in. Yeah.
Anyways, no, I think that those are huge developments on an individual level as well.
Yeah, and I mean, the Benoit and McCabe one, that those are, you hope, going to pay dividends for years to come, but where would they be? I mean, McMahon, a slightly different story. I think you can see a world where if he doesn't have the emergence he does, that's more run for Nick Robertson, and, you know, we've had that conversation a million times, but they're not dead in the water if Bobby McMahon doesn't have this, you know, breakout year that he had. They are without Simone Benoit.
Yeah.
If, I mean, you know, again, like, we give Bradshaw Living all the credit in the world for what Domi has turned into and Bertuzzi really seeming to be playoff bird at the perfect time, and he deserves that. But for a cap strap team, and guess what? All the good ones are, those are the moves that, I won't say win you cups because it's still going to be your absolute best player, but those are the moves that allow you to stay afloat. Finding your Simone Benoit's for nothing. Mm-hmm. The Ducks didn't want him. So, like, for all the credit Dubas got for Bunting, and, man, like, think about where they would have been if they didn't have him at 900K for the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Where would this team be? And I know it's weird because there was a time after the deadline where it seemed like maybe he was going to be the odd man out with the deck chairs and shuffling them with the D pairs, but you cannot take him out of the lineup right now. The way he's performing, it has just been the ultimate piece of foul money. And then to lock him up so that you don't have to worry about what happens should the Leafs win around and somebody's dying to pay him $3 million a season or whatever it is.
Yeah, a lot of responsibility on that pairing. Simon Benoit, yeah. Jake McCabe going to be the shutdown pairing.
Having said that, very real possibility that is ruse its ugly head. And that's not Simone Benoit's fault. No. Like, if Simone Benoit cannot be number one shutdown pair on a cup champion, there's a lot of people to blame for that. One of them, though, is not the milkman. Yeah. Who could have been had by anybody after the Ducks said no thanks.
No, he's very much a Dante from Clerks. Like, I'm not even supposed to be here.
Yeah. We were talking about this with Gorge yesterday. Like, does it not feel, and again, like, if this team, like, heaven forbid, run goes somewhere, like, yes, Matthews and Marner and Nylander and all the guys are going to, But does it not feel like McCabe and Benoit are going to be like co-mayors of the city by the end of it? Like they're just the guy. I mean, Bertuzzi, Domi, there's a lot more of those characters on the team
McCabe
now.
McCabe already looks like playoff hockey. Yeah. What is he going to look like after a couple of rounds, maybe, or one round, or a game, another game?
The Elephant Man. Like, oh, please don't look at me.
Yeah, he looks like playoff hockey.
I have one more 69 goal question for you.
Mm-hmm.
If I just set the number for Austin Matthews' career in a single season, 68.5,
mm-hmm.
over or under?
I think he does it again.
You do, eh? You really do.
I think this is not the career high for Austin Matthews. I really don't. I think, part of that is maybe we get expansion again during his career. But I think he can score more power play goals for sure.
He led the league in posts and crossbars.
Yeah, he was 20 a couple of games ago.
He broke Stamkos' record for it seemingly a month ago.
Yeah.
We have records for posts in the season. Remarkable.
What did you say? Did you answer your own question?
I didn't. I wanted to know what you did. And I was sitting here thinking, well, it's ridiculous for me to say it, but honestly, the thing that tipped me, expansion.
Yeah.
If we get expansion in the next 2 to 3 years while Austin Matthews is still like capital A, capital M, Austin Matthews, then yeah, I think it's very much in play. I also set the line at that. I do think it's like plus 500 for over, though, or like plus 325, something like that.
Well, sure.
Yeah, you got to get some odds there.
Absolutely, absolutely. Because as much as the shooting percentage has come down, it's no longer 20%. It's still a career high this year. But it was a career low last year, so maybe that's just things evening out a couple of seasons. Anyways.
And he's due, because he didn't score in two straight games.
So absolutely. And he's riding a five-game, at least, goalless streak in the postseason.
Mm.
Right? Did he score in game 6?
I can't remember. It wasn't a game 7, so that stat I have, yes.
Yeah, I can tell you how many game 7s he's scored in.
Can I tell you?
Would you like to know?
Yeah, go ahead. Do your joke.
Zero. Yeah. It's not a joke. No, it's just like he hasn't scored in a game.
Can I say my thing? You know who did score in game 6? John Tavares. Yeah, and he dropped to one knee and it was beautiful. And I can close my eyes and picture it right now.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's the only nice postseason moment you got.
It's all I got.
Mm-hmm. All right. When we come back, Blue Jays had a nice homestand and a nice series against the Yankees. Could have been great if not for a bullpen meltdown because of some unavailable arms and one guy that was made available that clearly seemed not ready for Major League Baseball. We'll get into that and more next. As the Fan Morning Show continues, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hey, it's Ailish Forafar.
And I'm Justin Cuthbert.
Join us as we discuss the most important sports stories of the day and tee up the biggest games of the night.
It's The Fan Pregame, 6 p.m. weekdays on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Gosman at 100 pitches right now, peeking back at Soto, delivers 101 on the day, and it's a swing and a miss, strike 3. Scream from Gosman as he spins off the rubber. He allows one, but holds the fort after that, paying Judge to strand Soto.
You know, really just, I guess, the mentality, more attack mode, being more aggressive at guys, obviously throwing more strikes. I mean, I know I walked, you know, 3 guys, but I was still attacking the zone really the whole game, and I thought we did a good job of mixing. And you know, obviously my last outing against these guys was a little different, so you know, was looking to pitch a little better, and you know, was happy.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning. Good job, Josh Santos. That's the only thing that mattered from the Blue Jays game yesterday. It's all positives as Kevin Gossman returned to form, getting through 5 innings, 6 strikeouts, 1 earned run as Blue Jays rotation.
Yes.
Again, like not afraid of the regression monster. Now it's like the last full time through the rotation. Everybody's good now. That's part of the story. I think the overarching one is blowing a 2-run lead in the 9th inning, unable to sweep away the New York Yankees. They finished the homestand 6-3, which is good. 7-2 would have been great, sweeping the Yankees, and it was right there on their stick, and they frittered it away.
Yeah, it is funny how much one
game can change it, right? Like 6-3, it's like, that's fine. That's good. Good job. Shake your hand. Pat on the butt. Go get back to work the next day. 7-2. You're really doing something. Sweeping the Yankees, that would have had such an impact to it. I do feel like we had conversations about this last year, like finishing series sweeps. It's not the time for now, but it's like, you know, you do want to pick up the odd sweep here or there. Again, you'd rather worry about winning 2 or 3 all the time than sweeping occasionally. But yeah, you would have liked to have seen it. Bullpen, man. It is, it's been a work in progress as the year's gone on, just because of the guys who haven't been available. They work Romano in not yesterday, but the day before. It's a little sketchy. They work Swanson in yesterday. Doesn't go particularly well. Mesa, another rough outing there. Yeah, the pen, I think with the bullpen, you obviously have to be careful before kind of making too sweeping generalizations. But yeah, not a good night for the pen by any means.
No. I still think the bullpen is good, and no Jimmy Garcia, not available after working 2 consecutive days, and we didn't know at the time. I was at the ballpark yesterday, and I was like, where is Chad Green? Like, isn't he on this team? And it turns out that he was dealing with the shoulder issue, which apparently is not a big deal. The day off today, they hope he's going to be available for the start of the series in San Diego tomorrow. And Tim Mesa, that's a tough spot for him. Like, yeah, as much as he can face all comers, like, he's generally supposed to be in there against lots of left-handed hitters. And Aaron Judge, I guess if you're going to talk about Austin Matthews being due, he was really, really due.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, a tough spot for Mesa to wiggle out of. The guy that stands out, though, yeah, a tough spot for him to be in, too. Eric Swanson. Mm-hmm. I will say, like, I do this thing in sports a lot where I'm like, hey, what did you deserve there? Blue Jays deserved to lose the second game of that series. Like, that tightrope walk by Jordan Romano with not his best stuff in his first major league outing of the season, and some line drives that could have easily, like the Alex Verdugo turning on the inside slider, could have very easily been a game tying home run.
Catch,
So I do think on balance, the Blue Jays only barely deserved to win 2 out of 3. So it's not like an unfair result. But to the point about Romano looking the way he did in game 2 of the series, and then Eric Swanson, like, right out of the gate, looking like he didn't have it as he was just laying in the meatball splitters that were not splitting, and Giancarlo Stanton deciding that was, like, it was tea time for him and just smashing a home run into the second deck in left field. What was the impetus to get he and Romano up as quickly as humanly possible? Because, like, the results were not... they were not overwhelming in Buffalo. And I get it, it's Buffalo. Like, maybe they looked at the stuff that they were showing in the International League and said that that's major league caliber. It did seem like there was a real push to get them into this series. And as a result, guy that was throwing 102 last we checked had to be optioned in Nate Pearson. I understand also Mitch White was DFA'd, but like, yeah, Mitch White.
Yeah,
and I know Bowden Francis was also warming in that game if things got really out of hand, but... no, Nate Pearson was the one guy where you're like, yeah, and we'll see him again.
Yep.
Although you can't for another, whatever, now 9 days because he has to be down for 10 days or I guess 8 days. But yeah, that was a guy that you probably could have used in that situation. And I think Eric Swanson eventually will be fine.
Yeah.
But just like I was kind of curious about throwing Jordan Romano right back into a tight save situation against, at the time, the best team in baseball.
Yep.
Kind of a curious spot to put Eric Swanson in, but you were out of options because no Chad Green.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head as to why they rushed these guys up here is that the pen was just getting taxed to a point. Now, Pearson is the obvious one that I think you would have much preferred him in that spot, obviously, given the way things played out. But yeah, I think that's why those guys are up here is that the pen was just getting taxed to a point. And yeah, you could have kept Mitch White, I suppose, but you know, that's not like, are you
I
feeling
don't care
much,
about Mitch White.
Yeah, okay,
no,
I was
no,
going to
no.
say...
I'm fine with Mitch White maybe being out of our lives forever. That's fine.
We all had the fleeting moment where we thought he dated Margot Robbie for 5 minutes, and then it was
I bought into that.
I know,
like, imagine being so good looking that
it's plausible.
Yeah, I was like, okay, maybe.
God, what a world. Not the case. But yeah, Pearson's the guy that you would have much rather had him in that spot. I feel very different about Swanson last night than I did Romano 2 nights ago. You know, for anyone who didn't hear it, it's like, I think he's your closer. You had a closed situation. He's back on the roster. You put him in that spot. Like, I do think there's something about that, but
I don't feel the exact same way about a setup man and Eric Swanson. You just had to get him in there. I do wonder, and, you know, feel free to tell me, like, no, you're reading, you're trying to make excuses for them. I do wonder if there was some element with just, like, the family tragedy that happened at the beginning of camp that they were like, let's push you forward to baseball, baseball, baseball. Mm-hmm. I don't think you get a guy up to the big leagues because of that, but I do think there was some element to trying to, like, hey, let's really focus on this. Not to say that he obviously wasn't thinking about his family, but, you know, we've all been there. You want to focus on work when things are going rough for you, but... Yeah, I feel very differently about Swanson last night than I did Romano two nights ago. That is not your closer. That is not a guy you had to put in a tough spot right away. I mean, you did have to because you brought him up, so you didn't have Pearson. But if you just didn't bring him up and you had Pearson, we're not having this conversation.
Yeah, and you can't predict, I suppose, the Chad Green shoulder thing. I think given their druthers, they would have preferred to have Chad Green in there. And you know what? Like, given their druthers, knowing that Eric Swanson was throwing batting practice... Mm-hmm. Probably would have had Tim Meza just try and shut it down.
Or Kiner Falefa, honestly.
Yeah, that was, it's just a rough one. And it's fine. Like I said, Eric Swanson was a big part of this Blue Jays bullpen a season ago. And that's a feel pitch, the splitter.
Yep.
And, you know, it's not like he was throwing 89 out there. I saw some 95s. Yep. But that's a rough one. And when it's right there for you, you two-run lead in the ninth inning against the Yankees team that's scuffling to fritter it away, like, that hurts. Dalton Varsho, though.
What's
two home
on?
Run game.
What's going on?
Okay.
We got to shut it down until we figure out what is going on here with Dalton Varsho. What is going on?
Two homers, including one against a lefty, which he did not do once a season ago. Now, one of those home runs was...
I feel like there's a lot of stats to that. It's like, he didn't do this once all last year. It's like, well, is it a good thing? Then probably.
It was... He and Vlad, like, we talk about the Vlad, no home runs until late June. I think it was around the same time for Dalton Varsho, too. Like, that guy did not... hit home runs at Rogers Center last year. You know what else he didn't do last year? There was a stat I kept bringing up that was, like, one of the key differentiators between his first season as a Blue Jay and his final season as a Diamondback. Is like, I think he hit one first-pitch home run last year where he was the league leader in first-pitch home runs his final season.
In Arizona.
In Arizona. Yeah. One of those home runs yesterday was a first-pitch home run. He's going right now. I already told you that I thought he should be climbing the depth chart over Kevin Kiermaier if... You're only going to play one of them, and certainly against lefties, that is the deal. They only play one of those guys. I mean, what do you do with? I should start here. Are you buying what you're seeing recently from Dalton Varsho?
To a certain extent, I think the truth of the player was always somewhere in the middle between the guy you saw on the road last year and the guy you saw at home. I am buying that Dalton Varsho can be a competent everyday player for this team. I am not buying that he is going to work his way back up and, hey, I feel free to keep hitting homers and prove me wrong, that it's going to ever have made sense to put him in the cleanup spot or the five hole. I think that as long as we have properly recalibrated expectations for what Dalton Varsho is, then yeah, I am buying it, but I'm buying it as a good 7-8-9 hitter who can play great defense somewhere in there. That's what I'm buying. When you, this is just, in my opinion, the opposite of what we see with Bo, where you go, okay, like, Bo's going to normalize. He's going to start getting his hits. It's like, Varsho's going to normalize. He's not going to hit four homers or three homers every week. But I think that for a player who everything went so wrong for last year, it can only buoy him that things are going so right to start this year.
Yeah, the offensive bar for Dalton Varsho is not very high.
There's no bar. It's just the floor. Can you step over this 1-inch tile?
Yeah. He limboed right under it a season ago, right? Like, even as bad as he was offensively, he got tons of playing time, played in 158 games last year because of the defense and because of the late-game defensive substitutions. I'm terrified of them moving him out of his spot. Like, just leave him right there. Like, take the pressure off.
Wholeheartedly agree.
Just let it all be a bonus. Whatever you get out of him offensively, he seems to be comfortable in the moment. It also should be said, so it's so early in the season, like, these numbers change so quickly. Dalton Varsho, at this moment, his OPS is a career high. He's never for a season had an OPS of 768, which is where it's at right now. His second season in Major League Baseball, where he only played 95 games, he had a 755 OPS. Blue Jays traded for him in a season in which he had a 745 OPS playing 151 games, which is not, like, overwhelming. It's an above-average OPS. OPS plus, where 100 is league average. He was 108 in his last season in Arizona. I think there are some people who believed that there was more there offensively, but at least the Blue Jays were like, well, well, we're going to get that offense.
Yeah.
If you do get that offense, now you got a player,
yep.
right? Like, now you got a player. And then, you know, if he can just hold, you know, hold his own against the left-handed mm-hmm. pitchers, and yeah, the drag bunt becomes a weapon. But if there's...
Listen to you. Oh, if he could just bunt better.
Yeah. And you go back to a season ago, what a weirdo season it was. If he was just the guy he was on the road at home last year over the whole season, mm-hmm. it's not an MVP candidate, but it's a guy who's like a four-win player maybe playing the defense he can play.
Well, and even if he's not that, if he could just revert to being the guy who occasionally runs into one, that is what this team needs so bad. The ability to have some semblance of pop outside of the top four in this lineup.
Honestly, I'll take it inside the top four, given the way things have been going. Like, that is the thing about him, is that if the power is able to exist at all, it kind of eliminates the ability to need stuff in the other at-bats. Like, yeah, sure, drag bunt away and give competitive at-bats, and that's important for everybody. But the ability to have guys on this team, it's, you know, it's not quite your Davis Schneider argument, but he can actually run into one on occasion for a team that needs guys to do that. They've had so much trouble kind of stringing together hits, and if you have a guy that can give you the big one, it's not sea changing, but for this team, it would be a sea change.
Yeah, Blue Jays currently 22nd in Major League Baseball with 16 home runs. That's just more than half as many as the Baltimore Orioles have, who lead Major League Baseball with their 30. So, yeah, is Vlad going to hit some more home runs? I would like to think so.
Mm-hmm.
Bo Bichette going to run into a couple?
A loud double yesterday.
Sure. Yeah, he was a foot away from a home run the opposite field yesterday. But no, you need more home run power. That's why I'm very much monitoring what's happening in Buffalo with both the Relvis Martinez and Addison Barger, who are off to great starts. And Martinez hit like a 470-foot bomb yesterday. Now, where his positional fit is on this team is in question for me. I'm just going on box score stuff.
Yep.
He's played the lion's share of his games defensively this season after being a shortstop and third baseman for the majority of his career at second base. He's played like 10 games there. He's committed 5 errors. So that seems bad.
Not what you want.
At second base, which
is
not
weird. Yeah.
The most, I mean, that sounds like Chuck Knoblauch stuff, which is not good.
No.
But if there is a positional fit for him, and there's never been a question about the raw power, right?
Nope.
It's been, can he take enough walks? Can he strike out? Can he bring the strikeout numbers down enough where you it's palatable, the plate appearances? I don't think anybody has doubt that he has 30 home run power in the major leagues if he gets there. Like, at a certain point, and I listen, Ernie Clement and Isaiah Kiner-Falefa have had fine little seasons, right? And they are who they are, although Ernie Clement had an opportunity to drive in a run by making contact and struck out on 3 pitches yesterday.
Mm.
But yeah, at a certain point, for a team that coming into the season, clearly there was going to be a power vacuum, has been a power vacuum. The Aurelvis Martinez, I don't think, is a perfect player or an MVP candidate. I think what he does, though, is hit home runs, and this team sorely needs it. There's going to be more of a push, I think. Mm-hmm. Well, I can tell you just for me. There will be a push from me to find a way for his fit defensively if he continues to hit balls out of the ballpark.
Yeah, and again, I'm not even going off the box scores. I'm going off you telling me the box scores. But
third hand.
I know, but you'd like to think that this is like, just if a guy can play short and a guy can play third, you would think this is just a, like, uncomfortable, and it's like a geometry angles thing that's affecting him. 5 errors is like, that's a lot. In that'd be a lot in 20 games, let alone 10.
Yeah.
I do think you're going to see it. I would just also like to congratulate you, because I don't know if you saw it, but I did physically wince when you mentioned Buffalo, because I thought we were going to talk about Joey Votto. I didn't even know if something had happened.
No.
I have not been keeping tabs. It's just as soon as you said that, I was like, oh, God, I can't do this again.
No.
But, hey, I'll happily talk about Martinez and Barger to a lesser extent. Pop, if you have pop on this team, they're going to give you a look at some point in time. I don't know how quick they force the hand. I don't know how quickly they want to rush to do these things if they see it as that. I don't know. Maybe so he can get it down to like an error every 3 games as opposed to every 2. Maybe that's what they're waiting for here.
Well, so I checked it after 10 games and it was fine. So he hasn't had an error in his last 2 games.
Oh my God,
he's now
call
played
him up.
12.
Get him up here.
I don't know. I'd like to see where those errors are coming from. If it's like a fielding issue or
throwing.
Throwing seems hard to imagine, but who the hell knows? Anyways, yeah, the pitching has looked really, really good. Obviously, the Blue Jays are only going as far as the starting pitching. God, where would you be if Kevin Gausman had another stinker yesterday?
We would not have been saving it for 6:54.
No, but thank goodness for everybody's sake that he was able to come through with a very promising outing. And again, the velocity up there. Last one.
Mm.
John Schneider tossed in the ninth inning.
That was classic. Like, I'm going to go get tossed here.
Yeah, it was an inconsistent strike zone all over the place. I think the Blue Jays probably benefited more from the inconsistency, honestly, than they were victimized by it. But he is very much in the Sheldon Keefe spot where it's like, oh, this is, you got to use everything at your disposal because if it doesn't go well, you're not going to work here anymore.
He has to try. He's got to do something. Vlad gets, pinched. It's not a great call to start the AB, but I don't know. Like, if that call is going to be egregious enough to get you tossed out of games, you won't be watching very many this year.
Mm-hmm.
This is part of the arsenal. It's a long season. You get tossed a handful of times. Schneider's probably somebody who kind of toes a little more to that side than somebody who's a little more, laid back. I think it's part of his MO.
I haven't thought it's enough part of the tool belt on the arsenal for John Schneider. So I was
happy to see it.
Encouraged.
Aaron
Boone is modern day Bobby Cox. So maybe he looked across the way. He's like, I don't know if Aaron Boone's been tossed because the Yankees have been so good to start the season.
That's a good point.
So he wanted to get out in front of Aaron Boone.
Yeah, you're actually right. I will say though, if you're gonna get tossed, like, and I guess it's just like different
pointing
now,
in a guy's face is so good.
It doesn't have to be Schneider, but like, I'd kill for a good old school Lou Piniella. Like, nobody kicks any dirt anymore. I haven't seen a hat thrown in a while. I guess it's early days of the season still. You got to like build up to that when your team's won 7 games and it's, June or something. I guess that's when you have to see that. But yeah, I don't know. I thought he could have got more of his money's worth. That felt like much more of a like, hey, toss me. Don't do that. Bad call.
Oh, okay. Aaron Boone has been tossed. So he's tied now for the American League lead with 1.
All right. We'll keep tabs on that.
Yeah. No, I think anytime you can get the finger right in the umpire's face, that's you're doing your job.
Thought he should look madder.
All right. When we come back, guy who's he's always so even keeled.
I was going to say he's so good at being mad.
Yeah, he is. I feel like it's 7 in the morning, though, maybe. Be a little chill.
Yeah. Hopefully for us.
Fingers crossed. Nick Kiprios, the real Kipper and Bourne next as the Fan Morning Show continues. Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.